N-O-I-S-E. It's the Noise Cancelling Podcast for me and thee. We're going to talk about tech and other things too. Get ready for it. Put this in your ears, boo. Oh, that went wrong at the end. But anyway, it's the Noise Cancelling Podcast. We talk about tech. We've got people on the call that want to hear all about it. Do we? Hopefully. Who's here? Start with Matt.
Hey, I'm Matt. I am TechRadar's video producer.
I am Henry T. Casey, an editor at Tom's Guide, covering all things tablets, laptops, streaming, etc.
And I'm Cherie L. Smith, editor-in-chief at Laptop Mag. Gareth, that was delightful. You have to sing more.
No, we don't.
I think you should take over the theme tune for Unpopular Opinion just for like a guest week, Gareth.
Yeah. I'll do it more like Chris did that time with the thrash metal version. That's more my, I'd say that's more my style. It's very much not anything heavy metal. EDM, you know, sort of like very pink bubblegum pop. That's more my thing. You know, I've been trying to get into K-pop a bit more recently because I feel like it's more my style, but I haven't quite managed it. But I like the ethos behind it.
How many times have you listened to Dynamite?
Zero.
Okay, well, that will burrow into your head if you let it, so that's my warning.
Okay. I've managed to forget exactly what I was going to do there. Oh, yes, sorry, I was going to ask. Why is it in America you get to chuck your middle names in as an initial when we don't? Why is it Cherie L. Smith and Henry T. Casey?
I did it when I first started my professional writing career because you use it or lose it, and I was hoping to differentiate myself from all the other Cherie Smiths or Sherry Smiths or however you're going to say it. As I thought my career was taking off, I found out that there is another Cherie L. Smith who is exactly my skin tone, who also has locks and is a young adult writer. So it was all in vain.
But you've carried on going.
Well, like she's a lovely person. I've gotten to e-meet her, and my goal is to one day surpass her in Google search. I've had best friends like, why didn't you tell me you wrote a book? I'm like, trust me, if I wrote a book, no. But if you look up Cherie L. Smith Tech, then I am the first search. But yeah, it was an attempt. It failed.
it could be Cherie L. Smith Tech, could be laptop, could be editor-in-chief. You know, there's so many things
out
there.
Yeah, all those things. But just my name, it just, nah, it's not going to work.
How many Henry Cases are there, Henry?
Well, there are a few others. I got this also because when I was starting my professional career, what happened was I wanted to register a domain. And somebody already had henrycasey.com taken for their father. His son made him a custom email domain. Not a website, just an email domain. So I was like, well, you're a good kid, I guess. I think that's a little overkill, but whatever. And so I thought, whatever, go with the initial. And then not once since have I encountered another Henry T. Casey, but there is the other. There is a, if I ever meet that guy, I'll just ask him, how is that email address holding up for you? Because I have to share my acronym with a phone maker. And that's always, like, because I use the initial.
Oh.
Yeah. Like, because I use the initial, now it's like, oh, HTC. Right. I feel like the also-ran of tech journalists.
Yeah, but also give it a couple of years and you'll probably be clear. Also, I'm very much aware I'm going to be ageist with this, and I'm very sorry to our listeners if this offends, but there are a certain generation of people who, at henrytcasey.com, might confuse them. Because, like, what do I put at the front? Like, hello at Henry T. Casey? It's sort of. Email me at Henry, like, that's a very confusing, like, you feel like you need the Henry separated. Henry at T. Casey, I'm all on board with that, you know, that would make sense.
I wish I had a middle initial to use. I don't have a middle name.
What?
And there is a Matt Phillips who is a footballer at West Brom, and so I don't even touch the first page of Google. It's an embarrassment.
He's actually quite good as well, Matt Phillips. He had a really, you know, he's maybe on the way now, but I tell you what, keep working at your career. I reckon 5 years' time you'd be all right.
Do you reckon?
Unless he has a good career in media, it's always a worry.
And he also will probably retire within 5 years, right? Soccer players don't have that long of a career.
Yeah. My middle name is begins with T, so I'd also Gareth T. Beavis. But I always feel like a T basically means the. I'd be like basically saying I'm Gareth the Beavis.
It always reminds me of, because I'm a super massive nerd, Star Trek. James T. Kirk. That's always what I think of with like a T initial.
It reminds me of Gordon the Gopher, which is very much an English thing for actually no one on this podcast would probably get it. They're too young for it. But Gordon the Gopher was a, I don't know why I'm telling you, it's a puppet on a TV show I used to love when I was younger, going live and such. my dad listens to this podcast still, and he will understand that as well. Hi, Dad. By the way, Dad phoned me after last week's one to say best one yet, when we all basically were sleep drunk.
Cherie's story about Times Square and the coin purse was a joy to edit. I didn't actually edit anything out. I just thought, well, I have to let the madness continue. I have to leave it all in.
Cherie, was that the Black Friday 2019 incident?
Yes, it was.
Yep. Well, Black Friday, you said it was Prime Day.
It was Prime Day.
It's all one thing now. It's just the year-long sales marathon.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, because of 2020, they are basically the same thing now.
Best Buy had Black Friday on Prime Day. So I don't blame myself for making that mistake. This is Best Buy opening a hole in the space-time continuum to bring November to October. What the heck, Best Buy?
Right, let's actually talk about tech at some point.
nah.
Let's go. So the big question this week was going to be, based on the fact that things are looking tricky again over at Huawei in terms of we just all feel like it's a bit of a shame that things aren't getting better. We know it's good technology. We know there's, you know, the camera phone on it is always really good. And we just feel like there should be more. So the question was going to be, how would you fix Huawei? But I think Henry's given me the callback there. I'd say, let's throw HTC in there as well. Like, how would you fix either of those brands?
Oh, for HTC, because Huawei, I don't have any experience with Huawei phones. I just every now and then we get to touch a MateBook, but HTC I have strong opinions about, because HTC back in the day used to be my jam.
And
my first Android phone was the HTC Evo 4G. And I had this love affair going. Like, they would do metal cases and they would be in splashy colors and you wouldn't have to like do a limited edition. Like, no, we're going to give you a premium looking phone that's made out of aluminum. It's going to be blue. It's going to be sexy. And then they just started falling off because I even had their Windows phone. I loved that thing.
They made three of those. There was different ones, wasn't there? There was the S, I think, and the V, and kind of another one, but yeah, they did a lot of different ones there.
They started falling off because they started doing too many things. They got into bed with Beats, and then the Beats was like, all right, we're gonna take our ball and go home now, and like that was a disaster.
Going on that Beats thing, I still quite, and I'm sure there's an economic expert out there that could explain it to me much easier than I can understand, but HTC bought 50% of Beats for, I don't know how many million it was, didn't work, sold it back essentially to the company again, who then, I think within a year, sold it to Apple for billions. So I'm like, how did that happen? Why did it become worth so much more to Apple? And Apple and Venice have done great things with the brand, or at least kept it, you know, kept the momentum with it going. But when HTC bought it and then sold it back for less, I was like, what did you do in that medium time to make it worth so much more money?
I would probably guess that it's about the complete ownership means full rights to all intellectual properties and technologies. And that extra 50% is just a magnitude, actually, of what the actual price becomes.
Yeah, of course. I just feel bad for HTC. You could have like hung on a little bit and done the deal together, but no, never happened.
But if I were HTC at this point and I were like seriously jumping back in the phones, I would hammer down. I would just go for flagship, right? I go for flagship, but it would be like flagship looks, mid-range specs, so you could get like draw people in with the, oh, well, this looks like, instead of like when Apple releases a new phone, it's like, oh, well, I can tell by your colorful chassis that your phone does not cost as much as mine. Like, it'd be like, oh, like, I only paid $500 for this phone, but it looks just as good, if not better, than your phone. And yeah, maybe the specs aren't as good, but it still gives me that premium feeling.
I think the issue there you've highlighted is that kind of getting that momentum back up again. I'm sure we covered this already in the podcast, but I remember the reason HTC faltered in my mind was partly because they didn't keep that momentum going in terms of being just technologically advanced and pushing. You know, the One M8 were brilliant, and the One M9 was just dull. you know, they kind of lost their nerve with that. But I feel like the real problem was they were just too small. They couldn't keep up with the pace of change and the innovation. And the kind of Samsung had such big R&D teams. Apple had such big R&D teams. And you look at any brand out there that hasn't got fucking millions of pounds to spend on marketing, you're not going to get that kind of, oh, I want that HTC phone, because everyone can make decent phones now. And HTC carried on making good phones with good specs and decent design, but it just wasn't enough anymore. And I feel like unless you could have that kind of, like whether they, if they'd invented the LG Wing, for instance, or like rebrought the Sidekick back or something that everyone's like, that's cool, I want that back. And then you do another one like that and another one, you start to get a reputation for it, then off you go. So anyway, sorry, I've completely side-railed this question. Henry, what about you?
I've been an iPhone person ever since smartphones were a thing. And I think if I were HTC, the thing I would do to solve all of our financial crisis is sign over the company to the person most befitting, the person with those initials. So he could actually just close the company and do whatever. No, I actually think that Sheree was onto something, I think, with colors and material. Like, because Apple's has this thing where they put the vibrant color phones in the lower end and have the higher end be the sort of muted colors. I think, I don't know if there's, it really would be the trick, but I want vibrant colors in the higher end phone. Like I want that, the bluest of the iPhone 12s has a blue iPhone 12 Pro. I say make the Android phone that has the best, it goes for those big colors, but also, hey, look at what Microsoft is doing with Surface Duo. That's the one, right? Their Android phone? Like, maybe look into seeing what you can do with this whole Windows. I would say high-end, big colors. That's what an iPhone person says. I'm the worst person to ask about this. I'm sorry.
I've watched you get lost in that answer. It was beautiful.
So yeah, for those watching it, listening at home, we do have video of each other, so we can all see each other when we're all either confident or confused, or hopefully not being pinged too much on Slack.
Matt, what about you?
The original question was, what would you do to save Huawei? I feel like we've moved away from that, but so I'll just convert my answer to HTC. I think mobile gaming is going to, like, it's already a huge thing, but it's going to explode over the next 5-10 years, especially like with the introduction of like cloud gaming and 5G making it easier for everybody. And so I think make the ultimate gaming phone. A lot of people have tried it and it's never quite hit because it's always been a bit naff. But I think now is the time. I think you can do it. If you partner up with Microsoft on the Xbox, which they've already kind of done with Samsung, but let's pretend that's not a thing. Partner up with Xbox and xCloud and really make a phone that makes sense for gamers and that you actually want to play Gears of War on or whatever that looks like.
We have that phone. Surely Razer have done that. Surely Asus have done that with some phones.
Yeah, but it was all a bit before its time. Like, the gaming experience on phone hasn't been everything it could be up until cloud gaming takes over, right? And now that we can actually play the new Halo in McDonald's on 5G, I want to be able to do it on a phone that feels comfortable to do it.
Okay.
And maybe it'll be a HTC phone. It won't be, because this is a ridiculous question, but
you know what? Maybe. I would never say never. Like, there are rumblings that BlackBerry is rising from the ashes yet again. So
no, there aren't. No.
It
no,
won't.
There isn't.
It won't.
There is no. There aren't rumblings. They're just you having a fever dream. That's all it is.
Are you sure? I feel like I could pull that. Let me.
I feel like you could pull that Tech Radar article from 2 months ago that did really well for us that claimed that exact thing. Yeah.
Just make things up.
HTC can't pull the Fortnite contract away from Samsung, right? They can't pull that move.
No.
Well, I mean, this is what I'm talking about. Like, Apple are making a huge hole by being as difficult as Apple are being in their cloud gaming sort of philosophy. They're making a hole that I think somebody can try and fill. And it looks like Samsung are going to do it because the Note 20 have that partnership already with xCloud going, at least promotion-wise. I don't think there's anything like specific hardware-wise.
I just don't know if like League of Legends is still the big thing that Apple was trying to claim it was at that event. They were like, we've got League of Legends on. Everybody's like, yeah, those that's a laptop game. That's not a
exactly.
Phone game.
That's such a terrible experience on mobile. But a controller is at least easy enough to carry around with you, like an Xbox controller. Whereas keyboard and mouse, you just
imagine the flex if it had been like, and we've got Fortnite, like just absolutely like turned it around at the last minute, like, psych, we all trolled you. It was all for this.
That'd be amazing.
I feel like we need to jump into the actual, to the meat of this podcast right now, because I feel like we've definitely inexplicably tried to solve HTC's woes. But I think we all agreed that I say all of us, like me and Sheree at least, agree that we missed them. And hopefully that things can reboot, because it was a lovely time back in the early 2010s. But the big news this week, the iPhones, right? They're out, they're reviewed. We've been using them.
It's kind of a big deal, I guess, if you're into that sort of thing.
Yeah. So I had a horrendous weekend trying to review both of them together. Because, yeah. Also, at the same time, sleepover happening for small children, which, first time I've experienced that, it was hell.
Oh, that's adorable!
No, it wasn't. They just got really tired and cried. It was really hard. It's very difficult.
Kind of a mirror to last week's podcast. Just being really tired and crying.
It's true, yeah. That was fun. But I know, obviously, Henry... Tom's Guide has reviewed them as well, largely in line with what we've been thinking, which is great to see. The big question for me is, 5G is the big selling point of this, that and kind of the MagSafe accessory, but I just don't think 5G's here. I don't think it's ready. I don't think it's any kind of selling point.
It's not. You're right.
Yeah.
Done.
I think it's interesting.
Time out of right, done.
As well. Yeah. That's it. Yeah. We're done, are we? Yeah. We're moving on? Okay, cool. Next story. It's interesting, right? Because I think... in the next 12 months, the hope is, right, 5G will be everywhere, right? And we'll start rolling it out. But because everybody's stuck in their home at the moment, I feel like people talking about 5G has become much less of a thing because everybody's on Wi-Fi all the time. Like, you're just not leaving your house, so why would you need 5G? But I want it to be a thing. Like I say, I'm a big gamer, really looking forward to the cloud gaming sort of future, and I want to be able to do that on 5G on the train when I'm on my way down to London or... whatever it is, I want it in my life.
The problem is that you're right. Like 5G is a great thing for the future. And I fully understand that it's a chicken and egg situation. Like Apple has to do something at some point to use the clout it has and the weight it has to start 5G being much more widely rolled out. And they worked with Verizon and other carriers as well to say, like, look, your networks aren't good enough. Like, you need to step up. And I'm sure Huawei and Samsung are doing the same thing as well. I'm sure it's not just Apple having those conversations. But like, on the train in, as well, I was testing it. I was training into London because where I live, I don't get 5G yet, even though I'm right next to a city that or a town that does. It doesn't stretch this far. So I got on the train in, and like every so often, the speeds would just spike up to brilliant, and then just go back down to like quite good, and then spike it up again. And it's just a frustrating experience right now. So I've seen some outlets have called this the best iPhone of all time, which I really can't understand. It's very good, but. The best ever. It feels like surely that's the next one when 5G is embedded and doesn't necessarily kill the battery as much as these versions do, because the technology still needs to bed in.
That's what I was going to say, is that our testing at Tom's Guide showed you get 2.5 hours less battery life with 5G than you do without 5G. And I don't know who is looking at their phone and their carrier plan saying this should be faster and not, no, I don't want caps on my data plan. I don't want, I want better coverage. Those two things seem to be the bigger immediate problems, I feel like, for people. 5G, cool. Apple had that scenario of a doctor being able to download a brain scan faster. It's cool. But like, I think if 5G is going to eat up battery life where it's taking from 11 hours, 24 to 9 hours and 6.
That was ugly.
That was like the difference between like Rocky 1 and Rocky 2 in terms of the result of the matches. Like, that's not going to be good, man.
Is that because it's hunting for 5G, or is that like on a solid 5G signal and I'm using it all day and I'm getting... Oh, it is. Wow. Yeah, that is... that's a big deal.
And that's why Apple has this smart data switching, so that it doesn't always keep using 5G. Even though you might see it happening, it doesn't need it all the time, so it can drop down and save battery. You know, it's a weird thing to publicize even at the start. I think it's what's difficult is that this is, in terms of the 5G journey, you know, like you said, Henry, that people have got much bigger pressing needs right now. However, 5G is not just the speeds. We keep talking about this, but 5G is not about the speeds. It's about, you know, the latency. It's about that instant connectivity, and it's about, you know, the network capability, so you can be at sporting events, you can be at concerts, you can be places where usually it's too congested and you can't even connect. That will then be available. And I had situations like that when I was testing where it suddenly just started to flow and it was like, this is brilliant, this is always on connectivity that I'm waiting for. So the iPhone 12 being kind of the one of the vanguards of it starting to become a thing around the world is definitely there. But this, using this phone in isolation, 5G is not a selling point for it. There's far more interesting things to talk about on it.
No, the iPhone 12 needs 5G for 3 years from now when the iPhone 12 was still in the iPhone lineup and 5G is better. That's why it needed 5G, for when 5G gets better for everybody.
Yeah, and I personally, I think MagSafe is far more exciting as well, even though we've only got, what, three and a bit accessories for it, with more to come from Belkin. But
no, that's completely agreed. That's the reason why I almost upgraded. I don't need to. I'm actually trying to pay myself out of the upgrade program. But the MagSafe is the thing that caught my eye. Like, this seems like the future of the iPhone, because we keep hearing those rumors, right? That Apple wants to go portless.
Yeah.
But I mean, nobody wants slow charging, but at the same time, this looks like how they would do that.
Yeah, and I found the charging for me on MagSafe was not quite as fast as I hoped it would be. It was just like 2.5 hours. Although the thing is, I was using a third-party 18-watt charger, which has been plenty faster than in the past with the USB power delivery, which is the fun acronym. But most people aren't going to... I mean, nobody is going to have that 20-watt charger from Apple. So you buy the MagSafe and you need that extra USB charger, or you buy an iPhone and you need an extra charger to use the cable in the box. You're going to have to go and buy that. So I feel like the ecosystem to fit into is, again, still there. I'm really perplexed as to why Apple has gone, get rid of the charging block out of the box at the same time as changing the cable to USB-C. I don't get that at all. Like, if it had been like a year or 2 years after they'd started to use the USB-C cable, yeah, totally, because everyone would have started to upgrade and they would have used their old one from in their house. But Apple says on its website, you know, use the charging block from previously. Like, no one's got this. You know, it's such a low penetration. I don't get it. So I don't even think it is a revenue generative thing. I think it is genuinely a lot to do with environment as well, because there are real benefits for it. It just seems a very odd way to do it, because it's just going to annoy people, especially those that don't realize they need it till they get home and go, hang on a minute.
But there is a revenue generating aspect to it, where they can fit more iPhones in a pallet and they can cut down their shipping cost by X percentage. Like, the box is smaller. Like, there is, and we know, we all have heard the thing that Tim Cook is the supply chain guru. So he must have been wanting to figure out how to make that box smaller for forever now.
Yeah.
Cherie, you're not going to upgrade, are you?
To an iPhone? No.
I just like to hear it.
But that's the question, right? Because there's the iPhone 12, the iPhone 12 Pro, but the iPhone 12 Pro seems like it sits in this weird window. So even though it's the more premium device, Cherie would never go for it, because she'd be waiting for the iPhone Pro Max, which is still 2 weeks away, right?
If not more, yeah.
If not more. And so who is the iPhone 12 Pro for?
Well, this is, I can't work out whether the iPhone 12 Pro is the better phone or not. You know, for the extra $200 or $170, it seems to make sense. But the Pro Max and the Mini seem like the ones that are genuinely interesting. The Mini, apart from worries about maybe a smaller battery, has got all the good bits of the iPhone 12, but is smaller, and people like smaller, and it's cheaper. People like cheaper. The Pro Max has got a better camera and it's bigger, better battery. So those are the ones that people are going to want, right?
Like, I just, like, I too am trying to figure out who the Pro Max is for, because the event when it was being introduced, it's like, okay, this seems like this is for filmmakers. Like, if I was an iPhone person, maybe I don't necessarily need this, because I like, yes, a lot of my pictures nowadays are taken with smartphones, but for the life of me, I have yet to make it look like the way that they do in the presentations. Like, it never looks like there's never that soft filter light in the background and the melanin is popping or what. Like, it's always like, hey, you managed not to get red eye. Good for you. So I don't know if that phone would be for me exactly. And I don't know if it would be enough. Like, I don't know if it's enough of a status draw for me to just get it just because it's outlandishly expensive. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a slightly confusing one in that sense. But I also think, the sensor on it is much bigger. You know, literally, physically much bigger. So therefore, you're going to have much better low light capability. And I think one of the things I noticed in the iPhone 12 and 12 Pro was like, yeah, that's great. They've added night mode. And night mode is really good on the iPhone and a variety of other phones, Pixels and Samsungs as well. But the night mode there is really quite startling. You know, it can take pitch black and actually make it almost look like day, which is just a fundamentally awesome thing. But they've added it to the ultra-wide sensor and to the telescopic zoom and these things. And I feel like I don't care about that. It's not as good. Make night mode better, make it faster, make it clearer, make it sharper. That's more the thing. And I feel like the Pro Max could feasibly do that because it's got a better sensor underneath it. So there, that could be a real win. It's not just the iPhone 12 with Apple. It's the iPad Air 4. That's also just gone live. Henry, you've been reviewing this, right?
Yeah. Honestly, it's my favorite. I think it's the best iPad overall, even though it doesn't have everything from the iPad Pro, because that $200 lower price doesn't mean you're losing a lot of what a lot of people might miss about the iPad Pro. The big news here is that Apple took most of the iPad Pro from its flat edges and thin bezels and gave it the A14 Bionic processor from the iPhone 12 and put it in a colorful series of iPad Air 4s, they call it, that are $599 US each instead of $799 US each. And that means it's more available to more people. And it's a great move because it also supports the Magic Keyboard and the good Apple Pencil, the one that snaps to the top and not, you don't plug it into the side like you're fueling the car or like checking the temperature of a turkey. Like, it's actually a convenient to use stylus. The only, like, I really like it a lot. I was using it the last few days. Pictures look beautiful on the display. Battery life is good, 10 and a half hours. Other tablets last longer, but I think when you have a tablet, I think 10 and a half or over is enough. But the big thing about it that people might wish they had is Face ID, because you're at home. You don't have a mask on. You're going to want to use that. But they put Touch ID in the lock button on the side, which is a really cool trick, but it doesn't really matter as much at home. I want to see that in the iPhone 13 when that comes to market. That seems like the perfect place to put that if Apple isn't able yet again to put the fingerprint sensor under the screen. But I think the iPad Air 4 with its lower price is probably the iPad I'll push people towards if people ask for my opinion come the holiday season. The only real problem, I said that already once, so the second other real problem is that the Magic Keyboard is still too expensive. At $300. Yeah. $300. That's about as much as you pay for a normal iPad on Prime Day.
That's like a Chromebook.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, I don't think that anybody who would buy an iPad over $300 is going to buy a Chromebook. I think there's a weird different kind of audiences there. But, like, it's just... Although, I love the Magic Keyboard. The keys feel great. The detaching, attaching mechanism is perfect. I wish it had a tablet mode, and I wish it could rotate a little bit more, but it's not the biggest deal when the price is the biggest deal. The Samsung's version of that for the Tab S7 is $200. Also, not that it's cheaper, but also kind of expensive too. And yeah. I would prefer the iPads because Samsung's is a two-piece mechanism where you have the keyboard as one and then the kickstand as another, and you attach it like you're putting together a paper airplane. And it's just... Like, I hate that someone would have to pay $100 more for the right keyboard, but these things don't work with each other, so nobody's really comparing them that way. But if Apple could get the price down on that thing, there would almost be no complaints other than the people who wish the headphone jack was still there. But the pro iPads haven't had that either.
Yeah, and it's a shame there's no, you know, adapter in the box or anything like that either nowadays.
Nope.
I know what you mean. And I'm sure that Apple must have looked at the Touch ID fingerprint sensor for the iPhone 12 because it's turned around a lot of things in results of the pandemic. But you've got to understand, like I know, you've got to think that the cost of adding in 5G has got to be saved somewhere. You know, could that be the reason for the charging block going? You know, there's got to be as many cost savings as possible to keep it in the same ballpark. Maybe that's even the reason the iPhone mini came out this year, because they had to have a cheaper version of it. But I think you're right that it's so easy to forget that the iPad Air and the iPad Pro, you know, they revolve around these accessories, and you just forget they don't come with it. It's so easy to misremember that. So,
is it?
Well, Microsoft set the standard here. The Surface Pro doesn't have a keyboard. You have to buy that separately. Ever since that, everybody else is like, well, we're not going to include a keyboard. The only thing they include its own keyboard is a Lenovo Chromebook that's really for tiny hands. That has its own built-in keyboard, and it's an interesting device, but like nobody included the keyboard, and they all kind of should, but then the price goes up and they can't market it as $599, which is a nice price point. We just have a giant asterisk the size of that headphone jack that everybody misses.
Yeah, I think that should be, you're right, people do are aware of it. I just feel that when these things are marketed and pushed, and you know that everyone talks about them, they talk about them with the keyboard, it's kind of an integral part of it, and it's easy to forget that the two are slightly separate come actual launch. And I think it's something that people, yeah, very much need to be aware of. Right, let's talk about, I know it's a little bit late, but I want to hear about our thoughts on the Xbox Series X. You know, we've had these kind of hands-on previews that have come through, but I mean, they're previews in the sense of, let's be honest, they're reviews, because people have been spending a heck of a lot of time with them, just not got all the features they're available to test. But you know, we've seen next-gen games, we've seen the UI, we've seen the backwards compatibility. There's not a lot more to come. Matt, are you excited? I know you're an Xbox super happy.
I am excited, although I have my Series S pre-ordered, not my Series X, because I have Game Pass, and really I just want a machine to be able to play Game Pass on. I've spent my big chunk of change on the PS5, and that's where I'm going to be playing, obviously, PlayStation-exclusive games, but also most third-party games, because that's where my friends are in that ecosystem, so I'm going to be playing those games with them. So for me, the Series S is the exciting one, but I have physically held the Series X in my hands. I haven't hooked it up to a TV, but I've shot it for TechRadar and GamesRadar, and it's a nice bit of kit. You know, it's interesting, they're kind of leaving behind the sort of traditional design of consoles, and both the PS5 and the Series X are quite different looking and huge, and so it'll be interesting to see how the PS5 compares. But the Series X is, it's really nice, and it feels really premium. It does pick up fingerprints a lot, but you know, at the end of the day, you're going to stick it in your entertainment center and not really think about it too much more. But if you're trying to shoot it like I was in a studio and move it around and get different angles of it, cleaning it down for fingerprints was annoying, to say the least.
But you can play Game Pass on a fridge. So what do you need an Xbox Series S for?
Well, this is true, but I'm an iPhone user, so I can't play it on my iPhone. So I need something to be able to play it on. And I've gone with the Series S.
And Shereen, what about you? I know that you like to have multiple versions of every console. How many Xbox Series X are you going to buy now based on this?
I am, for the X, I'll take the first one that's coming out. And then like what typically happens is that I'll wait for a really slick looking collector's edition, or Xbox or PlayStation, whichever comes first, will release a pro version of the upper echelon, and I will get that one. And that is how the consoles end up cycling through the house.
I predict it'll be Xbox that releases a pro version first, and I think there will be several throughout the generation.
Yes.
I think, you know, they've kind of adopted this theory of you play Xbox, and it doesn't matter to us which Xbox you play, even if that's on PC, but you play Xbox stuff and you're in our ecosystem. And I could very easily see a yearly even upgrade to the Xbox hardware, but the people on Xbox Series X and S aren't being left behind. Hopefully, they're not being left behind. But I think that's how it'll go.
Did you gain anything from the previews coming out? Did you learn anything more?
I think, you know, it was interesting what people were and weren't allowed to say. And I think quick resume is the thing that kept coming up. And you know, quick resume is the thing that feels next gen. So on your next Xbox, you will be able to have 5 or 6 games running. It depends on how intensive those games are. But you will have those 5 or 6 games running, and you will be able to jump between them almost instantly, right? It was in three or four seconds, you can sort of jump between those games and pick up right where you left off. And that, at the moment, is the feature that looks to be the most next-gen feature, the thing that you can't do on current generation consoles. So whether or not PS5 has something similar to that, we don't really know yet. I think people are assuming it will and hoping it will. But it'll be interesting to see if that really does change the way you play games. I typically play a game start to finish if I can, and that's kind of my game for that time period. Whether or not this with the sort of addition of Game Pass will encourage me more to drop in and out of games will be something that's interesting to see.
Right, we are running way over time right now, so I'm gonna ripple quickly through the rest of the stuff we wanted to chat about. Henry, your thoughts on the Pixel 4a 5G and the 5 reviews. Have you seen them much?
I've seen a little here and there. I've more seen the concerning news that there's a display issue with the Pixel 5, I think it was.
Classic Pixels?
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, if the screen is detaching itself on one's... hardware is hard, I think, is the phrase that Google is getting lambasted with. They look good. I haven't been able to hold one in my hands, but I've always wanted the Google Pixel, whatever, the next one to be the best, because I like their way of dealing with Android's OS stuff better, to be honest. It's cleaner, it's nicer, and I'm not a fan of Samsung's menus and all the visual whizzies that they add on top.
Cherie, Mario Kart Live.
Yeah, that's a thing. So basically what's happening with that is that toys come to life thing. So basically you get a RC car that is Mario Kart themed in nature, and you can use it with augmented reality. So you can basically use a RC car to run down Rainbow Mile if you are so inclined. I really want to see how this works in real life, because typically a kid plus an RC car equals disaster within 5 minutes or less. I want to see how that works, if the toy actually survives for a decent amount of time. And if it does survive, how long it will keep a child's interest, because I feel like...
That's the key thing, how long it stays interesting.
Exactly, because I feel like when Labo came out, we were all really interested in it. Like the building of it is really cool, and like it has some novelty for a little while, but like any kid, it's like, all right, I've done this enough, next. And I worry that this will be one of those type of toys.
And finally, Matt, the new Fujifilm XS10 review from K1 Tech Radar, or the hands-on, sorry. Are you excited by this? You like cameras.
I am excited by this. You know, it's an interesting sort of mid-range camera, but they've seemed to have focused quite heavily on the sort of video specs of it, which is quite interesting, right? It can shoot 4K at 30 frames per second, which is pretty standard nowadays, but full HD at up to 240p, so that's pretty impressive. That's almost like 10 times slow-mo effect to give you some really nice footage. 422 10-bit color output, which for nerdy video people, that's really impressive for a compact camera of that size. And it's touting some pretty impressive image stabilization stuff as well. I think, you know, Mark, who reviewed it for us, wants to do a lot more testing where that's concerned. But it'll be really interesting to see if it manages to pack all of these really interesting stuff on the spec sheet down into a reasonably priced mid-range camera. I'm excited about it, yeah.
Good. Right, it is time for the news blast. And this week, we've got Cherie taking the mantle. But Cherie's got the benefit of being able to write, talk about actual things that happened, not just stuff that we've made up, which is always a benefit, isn't it?
I enjoyed the fake news blast.
I did too. If I had a chance to think about it, I could have some real fun with that. But it was more just things I could see in my eye line.
Well, maybe when we're all tired from Black Friday, we can do another fake news blast round.
Yeah, true. Right, so the rules are, if you're new to this, you basically have 60 seconds, one who's on the podcast, of course. Listeners can do the same at home, see if they can beat us. But you get 60 seconds, and you just got to try and explain as many news stories over the last week as possible. The only rules are they have to make sense, and you can't read it off a script. So those are the only rules. Right, Cherie, are you ready?
Let's do this thing.
Okay, you're going to go in 3, 2, 1, go.
You mad? We glad. PS4 is launching a Black Lives Matter theme that you can get right now. So that's really cool. I love it. I'm going to download it. Xbox Series X, it's coming. The launch, you might not be happy with the launch games. There's 30 games. A lot of them are third party or games that are already out and about. So you're not going to like that. God, why Walmart? Why are you doing this? So Walmart is having not one, not two, but 3 Black Friday events through the month of November. So we're going to start on I think it's the 7th, the 11th, and the 25th. Thanks for just making my November a hell, Walmart. Good job. New MacBooks with ARM supposedly they're coming. Supposedly there's going to be an event November 11th or 13th, somewhere in November. November's just turning into this just menagerie of terror for me. Either way, iPhone 13.
Time.
Four and a half.
I feel like that's a new record in how few someone's got through.
No, that's just a step above my old record.
What did you get last time? Four.
Yep.
Okay. Fair play. Yeah, true.
I'm not even sure we can give you a half, really. You just said the words iPhone 13.
Yeah. I had to read what happened next to go catch up with what you're talking about. But the iPhone 13 may indeed include a modern version of this old favourite feature. What could it be?
Who knows?
Right, so four. Thanks, Sheree. That was enjoyable. Also, the fact is, whenever you do it, I really get the sense of like your thoughts on it at the same time, which obviously not great for the game, but you know, good to hear. Yeah, I get a real sort of like direct connection to your feelings on it, which is nice. Right, let's jump into what is it, Sheree?
Unpopular opinions. Let your hate unfurl.
Let it unfurl.
iPhone pixels consoles, what'll we hate on next? Unpopular opinions.
Henry, you are full of opinions and you want them to be unpopular. Or maybe you want them to be popular, you want to share. I don't know. But let's find out what you think about your health.
Well, I'll start with I don't know if it's a popular or unpopular opinion, but I'm going to say ignore the sleep tracking feature in the Apple Watch as like the normal sleep tracking feature. Download the app Auto Sleep, because I've been using this app to get actually qualitative with like how much quality sleep you have, how much deep sleep you have, what was your heart rate throughout the night. And I've been tracking my sleep over the last 4 or 5 months, and I've gotten it from multiple nights per week, every week with under 5 hours, with like 5 to 6 or less hours of sleep. And then so far in October, I've only had one night of under 6 hours of sleep. Yes, I finally had a red night. That was a fun one. I don't even understand why that happened. But I've been getting the Ring sleep health tracking is a really valuable thing for me. And I know I'll be contrasting with Sheree, who she would lose her gaming time if that were the case, if she actually tried to get the full 8. But it's been a brilliant boon for my life, because I'm just actually coming up to the morning meeting and the morning work with a giant grin on my face, which is just weird for me in general. But also, it's just helping me just get through the weirdness of the pandemic months, because it gets weird when you only have under 5 hours of sleep a night for multiple nights in a row.
I was going to disagree/agree with you slightly there, Henry, but I've also got my cats just wandered in, so if you can hear a kind of a vibrating sound, it's a purring cat just wandering around. I think she's just hungry rather than loving me, but either way, it's nice to have. I completely agree with the fact that you should not use the sleep tracking on the Apple Watch, because it's so basic. It's like, it's great that it's there, but it just says you were asleep, but there's a big amount of difference between it's really hard to concentrate when a cat's just there meowing next to you. But there's a big one difference between good sleep and bad sleep. Being asleep is one thing. And I've been using multiple fitness trackers of late to try, you know, the Whoop strap, the Garmin watches, and they all give you that kind of which parts of sleep that you're in. And seeing that difference is almost as important as how long you get to stay asleep. Like if you're just spending the entire time in light sleep because you've got anxieties or worries or anything going around your head, that sleep is no use compared to like a really good rock solid 5 hours of deep sleep. You know, you can really survive on that. So I think it's really, really, what's really cool is the fact that this has worked for you. And like I say to so many people, like it's so difficult to start a habit and to change something around and to make it happen, like having a cat who's just going to sit down next to you, which is good. So I think it's amazing that you've managed to build something in that's now actually working for you, because that's the key thing. Like it can be anything as long as it fits into your life.
I interviewed a sleep scientist and he said the most important thing is creating a ritual habit about when you go to bed. That was the hardest part really for me, was getting 10 o'clock to be my shutdown time. But the other cool thing of these apps is that like they tell you your sleep debt, like how much you're in the hole about how much you should be getting. So I've had this lower percentage. When the percentage keeps going down, it's like when I'm paying a credit card off, it's a good trending visibility.
I mean, I'm just so impressed that you can manage to get it down. Like, that's amazing.
I have a question. When do you charge your Apple Watch? I only ever had a Generation 1 Apple Watch, so different ball game, I know. But asking that thing to last through a night is impossible.
I'll tell you. I charge it 2 times during the day. The first is after I do Ring Fit Adventure in the morning for half an hour. That's the other part of my health tech thing, is that that's helped my back tremendously. I do that for half an hour in the morning, and then when I take a shower, I just throw this on the charger, and from about most of 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock, it's charging. And then that doesn't get all of it. Typically it gets some of it, but then, at 8 o'clock, the Apple Auto Sleep app reminds you, hey, throw me on the charger. You've got this much battery life right now. You might want to get some more. And by that point, I've already hit my stand goal for the day, typically.
Sure.
If I'm good.
But I mean, and that's fine during a pandemic where we're not moving around, but 8 o'clock, hopefully in the future, Henry, you'll be, you know, out and about, getting about town.
At that point, I'll actually be getting exercise naturally and not just chasing down a mythical dragon who's covered in Lycra. Like, that's... The Ring Fit Adventure is a weird, weird world.
I did not click then for a second. What the hell you were talking about?
I'm like...
I thought you said that's what Cherie does. I was like, does she?
Like...
Nope. Ring Fit Adventure's story is you're fighting a dragon named Drageaux, so Drago, who's wearing mesh lycra and has an attitude, and you fight him with exercise. And that is the weirdest story of a video game I've played outside of...
That.
I don't even know.
I love it.
But I think the key thing here is that, I mean, what was it with Ring Fit Adventure that made you want to keep going with it? Because I know so many people that have started it and just given up because they just can't be bothered.
It's just, I've seen the benefits about my physical health, not weight-wise, because I'm not tracking that because that's not my priority right now. It's just literally my back has, I remember I had my first time, my back went out when I was installing one of those under-desk trays. But ever since I've started to use Ring Fit Adventure more, my back has gotten much less problem. The lower back sciatica pains have gone away practically. But also, that amount of exercise helps tire the body out, even though it happens early in the day. And I think that's contributed to sleeping better, to be honest. So that's why I've stuck with it. Also, just because I find the story hilariously dumb. And I'm taking screenshots of all the text every time anything happens. But it's a good way to have a good morning ritual, to be honest. When you can't go to a real gym, or I wouldn't want to go to a real gym. Why would you? Why are you people going to gyms? I don't know what's wrong with you people. No, and I'm not going to do that. So I need to get exercise somehow. And that's how, in the time of pandemic, I am now on I think 2.5 to 3 months every morning streak with using this.
And I suppose my question was, why Ring Fit Adventure? Because this, you've probably tested so much fitness tech.
I have not actually. I'm not the fitness tech person, but this has worked for me mostly because it's more affordable than a Peloton, basically, and it can condense itself into the corner. Unlike that, this is a very small device, and it's fun. But like, I'm not the fitness person on our team. We've never met in person, I don't think. You would have figured that out if we had by now. But
we have, Henry. That really hurts.
Yeah, we've been in war rooms together. Come on.
Oh, okay, you're right. War rooms. I was thinking FutureCon. We never ran into each other at FutureCon. That's what I was like. We should have run into each other. We should have had a drink instead of. I blank out the war room. I barely remember what happened in there, other than the stereo was like, we were trying to figure out what song to play. And sometimes we all agreed, and other times people looked at other people like, what are you doing?
Yeah, I think Ring Fit Adventure is one of those things that will probably, you could probably get a pretty good deal on it this Black Friday as well, if you can manage to get one. These Nintendo peripherals always seem to sell out and become impossible to get around these sales and holiday periods. But I think it'll be a popular one this Black Friday.
Well, thank you very much, everybody, for finding all the different things to talk about with tech this week. What a lot of fun. Cherie, have you had a good time this week? I feel like I just want to check in on you.
I always have a good time when I'm doing noise cancelling.
Henry T. Casey, the junior.
I've always had a good time doing this podcast. I've done it twice now, and I look forward to completing the hat trick.
And Matt Phillips.
Always a pleasure. Always. Love talking gaming and phones and all that fun stuff.
Well, and I've had a nice time. I've tried to reset this setup. I ended up with my cat right here that I'm going to show you the...
Aww.
There she is. Just
we'll put a screenshot in.
Yeah, we can do, but also this is gonna my audio is gonna be full of just like a purring cat, which is nice. It's a good ASMR kind of thing. I've had a lovely time too, and I really enjoyed going back to HTC at the start. That was good. Right, well, thank you very much for everybody for joining us. Cherie, kick us off with how to get in contact with you.
You can get in contact with me on Twitter or Instagram at MissSmith11. That is M-I-S-S Smith11. And of as always, laptop then, laptop now, laptop forever.
Henry, what about you?
You can find me at Henry T. Casey at all the social medias and at tomsguide.com, where I am covering, well, this weekend it'll be op-eds about Apple TV Plus, Ted Lasso is a great show, and all sorts of other things.
It is a great show. I couldn't believe how good a show it was, because, you know, it's about English football, and I was ready for it to be just a really confusing take on an American take on our lovely game. But it was really entertaining, and I just absorbed it in about 3 days.
And it fits the whole Apple TV premise that we all heard about at the start of, like, uplifting or wholesome. Like, it's got its, like, down moments, but, like, there's a really good energy to that show that I feel like it verifies that message actually is possible.
And also, it's really annoying because, obviously, I don't want to spoiler it, but it's got an incredible finale.
So that's what I was
Yep.
And, yeah, one that I urge you to watch. I'll pick up with you later, Henry, because I really need to discuss that with more people. Matt. How about you?
I'm great, and you can follow me on all the social medias at Matt P Video, or just head to YouTube and find Tech Radar on YouTube and subscribe there, and you'll see my lovely face a hell of a lot.
And I am Gareth T Beavis. You can get me as on Super Beav on Twitter. You can obviously check out Tech Radar on all the socials, because we have a lovely unique name, so please do check that out. And come to the website. That's our moneymaker. We'd love to have you on there, and we'd love to hear your feedback. Please be nice. And if you like this podcast, please subscribe. Give us 5 stars on iTunes or Apple Podcasts now. Why do I call it iTunes? It's never been that in my podcasting career. And just find us wherever you can and tell your friends about it, because we need as many listeners as we can get, because it's a very congested market out there and we want you to love us. So thank you, everybody. I will speak to you all next week. And listeners, you'll hear from us next week too. Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.